But how would you describe each and every single teammate you have ever raced against in one word?
So many teammates. I would say probably fair.
For everyone, so look at this, we've got Americo Deal. This is 2018. Americo Deal.
Cordial. Okay, not, I mean, not all fair, but like, okay. I'm trying to make it better word. Let me think.
Hello and welcome to the F1 Feeder Series podcast, your guide to keeping up to date on everything in the junior single-seater world. I'm your host, Jim Kimberley, and this week very much looks like autumn has come with some quieter weekends as Feeder Series championships have started to wrap up. Joining me this week is a driver who got Josh Revel hyped two episodes ago, asked a question that brought Brad Benavides' Wi-Fi down last episode, and is now here to join the actual podcast proceedings after his rookie F3 campaign. And things have slowed down a little bit for you as well. How are you today, William Alitalo?
I'm fine, thank you for asking. Just right here at my home in the small village of Ilmajoki. Not doing much, honestly. Being working last week and this week a little bit more training. And kind of preparing before I leave to the army. You know, not much racing going on.
Oh, wow, the army. Yeah, of course. I remember reading this with Mr. Raikkonen as well. So when does that start?
Monday, next Monday. So in a week.
Oh, so we couldn't do this podcast next week. Crikey, well, your last bit of freedom's with us. What a lucky guy.
Yeah, exactly. 6 days to go.
Not that you're counting, but also with us this week is a man who, despite spreading himself across so many championships in 2022, also finds some time for the podcast to share his racing wisdom. I don't know what the last thing you did was, Chris. It's a virtual Le Mans, was that what it was? But you're always, you seem to be here, there and everywhere. Welcome back to the podcast, Chris McCarthy.
Yes, Seth, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been nice to actually have a couple of weeks off. But yeah, Le Mans Virtual was the last one, and that's second round's coming up this weekend. But yeah, it's been nice to have a couple of weeks off, sit back and watch the racing. It's been really nice.
Yeah, Feeder Series quieting down a little bit. I know there's a lot of stuff with F4 and whatever going on this week, which is always more difficult to find to watch. But I echo those thoughts. I actually felt like a couple of weeks off, a couple of weeks quieting down. So I totally know what you mean. Really starting to wind the season down a little bit. But completely the other opposite end of winding down was a person joining the podcast when we were ramping up at the start of the season. We've got the F1 Feeder Series Super Formula editor, Rennie Oudman, joining us once again. And it's been, I think you counted it as 6 months or so since your last time on the podcast.
It has been already 6 months since I joined the last one. But I liked it so much that they wanted me back. So here I am again.
I love having you on, Rennie.
Any Super Formula information today, but maybe if William wants to join Super Formula one day, we can arrange something.
Rennie, I get the impression you're the kind of person who has opinions on things anyway, be it Super Formula or other things. So I'm thinking we're going to have a few things out of you this time.
I'm Dutch, right?
Yeah, Max Verstappen didn't have any opinions in qualifying, so you know it's all the same. You Dutch people just keep your opinions.
Yeah, boring people. There's nothing to worry about. I won't say anything wrong tonight.
Don't worry, we've got the peaceful presence, the calming influence of William Alitalo joining the podcast, and from his Twitter, I don't think he has any opinions at all.
Sure not.
We'll see. As ever, a quick reminder to like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, where you can find our previous episodes and some short videos of our best bits on the rest of the channel. And if you're listening to the audio-only version, first off, the noises you're hearing are dogs that are around me, which usually aren't. But after seeing Ralph Bouchon's dog last week, Lucky, I thought, we'll have some dogs on the podcast. Why not? But also, please leave a review on whatever podcast platform you're using. You can leave a rating on Spotify and review us on Apple Podcasts. Every review and rating is so helpful, and we keep gaining new ratings every week. Thank you so much. Thank you to everyone who rates and reviews us. It really does help us out. Okay, Formula 3 might well be finished, but I have to ask this simple question I've asked all of our recent F3 driver guests. Mm-hmm. How was your season from your perspective, William?
Yeah, kind of hard to put it in one sentence. It's just
One sentence. So I mean,
but I mean, like, I could tell hours and hours about the whole season, but yeah, just been ups and downs basically. One weekend goes really well, and the other one then is really bad, and just wasn't really consistent. I definitely had some good moments, no doubt about that. And you know, I even before the season started, I was not like, I'm gonna fight for the championship. Like, goal was to get to the points in the races and be, you know, close to the top 10 in the end of the season. Didn't really manage that. Still had some good races, especially like in the last three races. Oh, actually, Spa and Monza, Zandvoort was horrible. kind of was a tough season, definitely. Especially like Bahrain and Imola, where the driving for me really wasn't there. Just made some small mistakes, which had big consequences. And then after that, felt like really didn't have the speed on qualifying. And okay, race pace was not awesome, but was still much better than the qualifying. And wasn't really sure. Like, it felt like I did a good lap and just wasn't enough. And then some other weekends, then I did some small mistakes and didn't get up there in the front or in the top 12 in the quali, which is the goal to get to the reverse grid and to the sprint race. So yeah, was biggest issue definitely the qualifying. It felt like I always in races I could go forward, and yeah, just I wish it would have been a little bit better on those races that didn't go well, basically. So where Bahrain and Imola, for example, the speed was actually much better. But yeah, I mean, I learned a lot, but yeah, was kind of still thinking about it a lot and still losing sleep.
I thought you did as well as you can with the material that you had. But can I ask you? So you came off Freck, I can't remember what it was last year.
I don't know. I don't even know.
Chris knows.
Yes, Freck. Yeah,
Freck last year. Eurocup, Italian F4. So you have done some proper championship racing. Was Formula 3 the step up to Formula 3? Was it greater than you expected, less than you expected? Was it kind of the level that you thought it would be?
I think it was the level I expected to be, honestly. It wasn't, I knew that it would be hard as a rookie on the championship, and haven't done much testing, even with the GP3 car. I was, just getting on in Bahrain in the preseason test, and after that, just doing more like everybody else, or maybe others did more with GP3 cars, I don't know. But just didn't have much testing, and I knew that it would be a tough year. But still, my expectations were a little bit higher. Was still okay, I would say, but should have been a bit better. But it was something that I expected, the level of the championship.
Yeah, it was a really high level this year. I said in the podcast before that this was... No offense to Super Formula, which I haven't kept all up to date on, and no offense to Frecca, but Formula 3 was the championship in my eyes, watching it, how close the races were, how many people were getting pegged back. Nobody seemed to streak ahead. It was nail-biting throughout. Rennie, you mentioned, I'll give you your chance here, because it's been 6 months since last time, and you might have some opinions on things. How did you find the Formula 3 championship? Because... my perspective, like I say, I thought it was super exciting. Was it so good from yours as well?
Did you? To be honest, I haven't seen every single round because I was doing things in between with my own company, supporting drivers on PR side as well. But from what I've seen, it was massive. It was just like Formula 3 is used to be. It's it's always competitive. It's always several drivers up front. In the end, it's the guy winning who we thought was the biggest chance to get the title, Victor. But it was in a style that, everyone was like glued to their televisions, or the people who there sticked with their eyes to the track, what was happening there. So, it was another fantastic F3 season. And this is the reason why F3 belongs in the ladder of the feeder series, I guess.
Yeah, I would really say it was. It's like Max Verstappen this weekend when he goes, what's it, P8 to P7, but with how many steps in between? It was like Victor Martin is the favourite and gets the title. But if that's all you looked at, you missed a terrific season of racing. How about you from your side, Chris, as well? Did you enjoy it as much as we're professing?
Oh, absolutely. And the race weekends, I think I was quite fortunate with the ones I got as well. I mean, they were absolutely brilliant. Hungary in particular was a fantastic weekend of racing all round, you know, particularly with the drivers who gambled for slick tyres as well. That was a really brilliant race to watch.
Sullivan's 500 places.
Yeah. And I mean, while we've got William here, Spa was an absolutely cracking race, partly down to, you know, William made some absolutely brilliant moves in that race as well. And was one of the stars of the show there, really, on that weekend. That was another fantastic race to watch. And Zandvoort, obviously, we had a really brilliant story coming out of that weekend as well. But, you know, six drivers going into the last weekend separated by a race win, essentially. You know, we haven't had a championship like that for a long, long time. And it was decided after, you know, 25 minutes after the flag, basically, wasn't it? So, an absolutely fantastic championship. I think, you know, the driver who won the championship ultimately overall probably deserved it. But any one of those six really could have gone in and won it. It was fantastic to watch. But you know, Williamson, I think, did a brilliant job throughout the season as well. While we have him here, you know, in Freca last year, kind of led the Arden team to some really good results, became a bit of a leader, and I think did the same with Genta this year. So big congratulations on this season.
That's too kind.
Not too kind at all. It's exactly what you need. I do feel that when you're in the feeder series world, you can really see the drivers who excel potentially more than the teammates is always a barometer, but more than you always expect from a certain team as well. Like, I would never go in and think, I know it's not the same, so it's easy for me to crap on them a bit more, but HWA to win the championship last year, that was never going to happen. So I think you've been very harsh on yourself, and you should, I know every racing driver wants to do better than they did, but give yourself a pat on the back, because one of the stars for many people will. So I want to talk a little bit as well about testing, and I know, Chris, you were keeping an eye on things. Will, you weren't there, but we had Michael last week talk his thoughts on it from watching the timing screens. I know you were also keeping a real close watch on things and putting the videos out on your YouTube channel, which I'll link to below if you're watching on YouTube.
Yeah.
How did you view things, and what do you feel about next year's Formula 3, potential Formula 3, and some of the testing times?
I mean, firstly, that spreadsheet Michael put together was absolutely fantastic, by the way. It helped a lot. So, thanks a lot to him, because it helped with the videos that I did. But, I mean, you know, there was a lot to take away from that test. Firstly, the amount of new drivers that we had come in. You know, what we read into that, I think we can say that there could be a lot of drivers moving up to F2 next year or sideways to other championships. But I think the grid's probably going to look quite different next year if testing is anything to go by. And it was also looking like quite an open championship. You know, we had three drivers in the top 10 every day throughout all 3 days. Caelan Frederick left on the last day. He was in the top 10 in both days. But, you know, Gabriele Mini he put in a fantastic performance. Pepe Marti as well. And also Zach O'Sullivan as well, who some people were a little bit confused as to why he was in the Primo car and not another driver who's been doing very well in F4 this year. But I think he went in and did a really good job and proved himself that he was worthy for that seat. And Bortoleto, of course, I think he was quickest overall, wasn't he? Which was really great to see. And has gone off the back of that and now put his name on the grid for next year. But at the end, Colapinto, top seed in the test, saved the best till last when it did it. But yeah, I mean, overall, it was quite fascinating to watch. And I'd say Genza, actually, Taylor Barnard did quite a good job as well. That was definitely one very impressive drive from him to get in the top 10 at the end there as well. But yeah, overall, very fascinating. I think next year is going to be a very open championship. I think that's what we can take away from that test.
I'll tell you something, Chris, hearing the names and going through everything there again, it's like getting a mishmash of your top driver rookies from Formula 3 this year and then some of the drivers we're expecting to go up from Freca this year, and just smashing them together in this ultimate grid of really exciting drivers. And this is where I want to lead. This is not the most elegant segue I've done, but also who might join 2023? Is there a driver on this podcast possibly who has anything to say about the season next year? Will you be joining those names?
No, even if I would have some idea or a contract, I couldn't tell you, but I can say freely that I have like nothing now. Nothing sure yet for next season.
Are you hustling for it? Please tell me you are looking.
Yeah, I've been working all day, driving the dump truck, trying to sell rocks in my small town to get some money. And of course, you know, that's not much, but trying to, of course, find some sponsors and supporters. But yeah, in the end, it's all down to the budget. And if I have enough, I'll drive. If I don't, then I won't drive. It's as simple as that, basically.
Is there something you can say, Will, from the perspective of the side that we don't see as the non-drivers in terms of when you're talking with the teams about deadlines, when you'd be able to say, like, well, are they at this point saying, well, if you want to drive for us, we need to know by the start of November and things like
exactly,
this?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So there's not, of course, normally nobody has exact day of deadline, but like they will tell you that you have to know soon enough or in this month or something like this. And if you don't, then we'll give the seat to the other driver. And yeah, it's just like that. So, you know, of course, it's beginning of October. Yeah. So there isn't like, even though the season starts in March, there isn't like that much time on F3 to find good seats. So yeah, I've been trying all my best to find something. But yeah, it's been quite tough and just been working and training and trying to find something for next year, but for sure, like now, I don't have any idea yet.
Well, I can definitely say everybody listening's got their fingers crossed for you. If you need anything in Japan, Rene's your man to give you some insights as well, right, Rene? I get the impression from my little knowledge of Super Formula that Will would be a brilliant addition to the grid with his driving style.
I'm saying to most of the European drivers, go look elsewhere as well, because Japan is a formidable place to make money, have fun, and race with like beasts of cars. So, yeah, William, if you look for something in Japan, hit me up, man.
Having fun and driving beast cars and sounds good enough.
Yeah, and there's one very good, renowned bar in Tokyo, the Geronimo Bar, where everyone goes and have a beer after the race. So, yeah, that seems to be fun as well. So.
Yeah, for sure. That's the important part of it, yeah.
Yeah, you're Finnish, right? So you're used to drinking beers? Or vodka? Yeah.
Best thing as well, Will, for you is that if you do tweets, no one in Japan can, or not as many people in Japan can read the English parts, so you'll be fine. Just
tweet. Exactly. I'll be fine. I don't even care.
Let's move on quickly because we've got not so much in the racing, but lots of questions to go through. But Frecker, we've got you on. Chris, we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Two-race doubleheader finale this month, Barcelona-Mugello.
Yeah.
What should we expect? And what's happened since the last time you were on, which I don't even know where that was, but call it a month or two.
Yeah, we were at Red Bull Ring last time. It was probably the first time ever we had pit stops, which was really cool, actually. I think the quickest we had was about 11 or 12 seconds. And the teams had worked, as William would know from being with Arden, the teams do practice for it, but it was thrown on the teams last minute. They just did not expect it to happen at all. And Paul Aron, was leading, went in and gambled for slicks, and then ultimately ended up having an incident with his teammate Montoya going down to turn three, which has really taken him probably out of the title fight. Now it's Dino's championship to lose, really. He's over 40 points clear, I think it is, from the likes of Gabrielli.
Adrian had 3 points right now.
53. All right. So, yeah, I mean, it's his to lose now. And when you speak to him, he does, you know, he comes across as someone who is leading the championship. He's a very confident driver, but very humble. And I'd be very surprised to see him throw it away. But But, you know, you never know. Strange things have happened, if we're going to talk from a neutral point of view. Gabrielli is very consistent. We'll see what he can go and do. But Hadrian's going to be going in very confident to the last couple of rounds as well. And Paul will want to come back in as well and redeem himself for that incident that he had. But yeah, Barcelona should be good. And Mugello, with push to pass, I think Mugello is going to be the best place to win the season, actually, because last year we didn't see that much overtaking there. But I think with push to pass this year, it's going to be a really, really good race. So yeah, you're not going to want to miss it.
Looks like a spectacular track as well, Mugello, to drive. So those drivers are really going to enjoy
it. My favourite, definitely, to go to. It's an absolutely amazing place to go.
Well, Will, do you have any thoughts about, well, one, Mugello, but also do you keep up to date on Freca this year? I know it's kind of in your past, but have you been watching?
Yeah, I kind of do. Like, sometimes I watch it and, you know, I follow the Arden team drivers, but not really. Like, I haven't seen live that many races. I haven't been, I've seen some races, but I'm not really up to date on it. I'll try to, what's the next one? Barcelona?
Barcelona next.
I'll try to, of course, follow now. When my racing is finished, then I have more time to actually follow the other series. So for sure, I'll watch the races. And Mugello is the final in the...
One week after Barcelona.
One of my favorite tracks also. Like, I think Spa and Mugello are definitely like the top two. It's even kind of hard to decide which one is better to drive. And even the racing there is normally quite nice. So yeah, hopefully we'll see some good racing there. And yeah, it's overall great place. Nice in the Italian kind of hills. And yeah, it's amazing. I love it there.
Well, just to keep you up to date, and possibly René, I don't know what you know of this season, but Boganovic currently leading the championship after taking a dominant start to it. 250 points now he's got. But Gabriel Mini hasn't had the same luck that maybe people expected at the start of the season, but he's kind of kept him just about there, 197 points behind. Mm. Paul Aron, as Chris was just discussing, 176 points in third place. Hadrian David, 172. Cas Havercourt's had a terrific change in I'm looking at his results now. He's grabbed a couple of wins, but...
Yeah, that win, by the way, just to say, at the last round was absolutely fantastic because he came from about row seven, I think. Wow. It was, to win the race. It was absolutely... And Josh Dufek put in a really good performance as well to come through and get a podium. So... Yeah, big props to Van Amersfoort because they've done really well with the signing of both of the guys this year.
And then Gabriel Bortoleto as well, right up there. That's top six. So they're all the ones with over 100 points. Now, these are driver names that you will know, Will, after racing with them before. Are you overly surprised that that's your top six?
I don't know, actually. I don't remember much about last year. I already forgot.
Hey, you could possibly be racing these guys next year. You need to remember quick.
Dino's first, yeah?
Yeah, Dino's first. Second. Dino's first.
And yeah, okay.
And then Gabriel Mini is
Gabriel second. And Aron. I mean, it's kind of makes sense, yeah. So why not? Yeah, Dino first, Gabriel second, and Paul Aron third. Yeah, makes... Well, I don't know, actually. I have to quickly check like who else is there. I honestly, it's too many drivers. Like,
it is a massive grid. I don't know how Chris does it. I could barely
40 drivers. Yeah. So it's quite a lot to know.
Well,
and
Will goes and has a look on Wikipedia. Go on.
There's Adrian David Ford. So I also he has to be up there. He was good also last year. For me, actually, the top five, top six makes sense.
Yeah.
I know Belov didn't drive the last races, so he for sure would have been much more up there. But yeah, I think these places kind of make sense in the championship. So yeah.
Let's see, looks like Boganovic will win. And how about you on your side, René? Do you need a Wikipedia quick look up, or have you also...
No, actually, I'm really interested in Freca this year because of Cas. Obviously, he's Dutch, and we Dutchies only support everything which is Dutch. But also because, you never noticed, right? Oh, super marks. But if you look further, you see Laurence van Hoepen, which is a 16-year-old kid from Holland, who skipped Formula 4. And he is being guided by Nick de Vries. The entire world knows Nick de Vries right now. So I'm really keen on to see what he's able to do next year, because he's had a challenging season. But I really do believe that Laurens is very, very talented. And although he had some rough qualifyings, it was mostly down to the qualifyings. But if he can get it all together in qualifying, he will definitely be a factor in the 2023 championship for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he had a bad first weekend. I think he crashed both races. But other than that, I think he's been in the top 20, except for one race, basically. He's been knocking on the door of the top 10 every race since. And Nick's been out a couple of the rounds with him, which has been great to see. And he, I mean, if Nick's able to, he goes to the races with him. But yeah, he's shown a lot of pace to jump straight into that car. It's a very quick car to jump straight, skip F4 into that. He's done really, really well. And I think the last two rounds, he could be one to watch as well.
Yeah. The moment when he, oh, sorry, Jim.
No, please, Renny.
Yeah, the moment when he really caught my eye, and obviously I've known him for a little bit longer because he's Dutch, but is when he won the rookie standings in Monaco, when he was best rookie in Monaco. Like, you won't finish best rookie in Monaco if you're not talented, right? So, yeah, that was one of the standout moments for Laurens this season. And I'm pretty convinced he can finish the season on a high. It's looking good. It's getting together.
Okay, well, there wasn't much racing in Freca or F3 recently, but there was some racing in W Series, of course, a similar-ish car, that we saw Jamie Chadwick not win the championship. How about that? Now, I know a couple of people here watched the racing, and... Well, Singapore is always going to be difficult. There's no DRS, there's no push to pass. But bikes give us a one in Singapore. And Alice Powell had a sensational overtake on previous podcast guest Marta Garcia going into the Bay grandstand after setting up about four corners before. But the Chadwick was the big headline, I thought. P8 in qualifying. Like a certain other driver who might have been able to take the championship this year, this race, and didn't. But it's a weird sort of race in Singapore. Will, I know you watched it. How did you view W Series with what could have been a championship winning race?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch practice, but quali I watched, which was interesting enough. I mean, lots of rain. Yeah, wet in Singapore. It's already interesting, and it was quite a lot of water on the track. So yeah, it was really interesting to see like how the drivers and the differences were quite big. And Marta was then clearly fastest there. But yeah, it's like probably one of the toughest like races you can, or like situations you can think of, like rain in Singapore without much practice. So like you actually really see there like who can, in difficult situations, who can do the best. And yeah, definitely. Then the top three were really great, great there. And yeah, Chadwick. Yeah, this time she didn't do pole, she didn't win. But yeah, I don't still take anything away from her. I mean, you won't be always first, and sometimes you do mistakes. That's like you saw what Max Verstappen doing this race. He didn't win it, so it happens to everyone. So that's part of racing, and I still see her definitely the best. The series driver there. It kind of looked weird when she actually drove into the wall. It looked like she braked late and then she kind of came off the brakes again and then tried to turn and then brake again and came off brakes. And it didn't look like clearly that she was going way too fast. But yeah, still, it was just a small mistake and into the wall. And that sometimes happens. She had to make some risks, otherwise you cannot really overtake in Singapore with those cars, especially like those in VC, especially when they drive with the Hankook tires, so they don't have any tire wear, but like in Singapore especially. And then with those cars, it's like the toe effect is so little, but like you have to get either a lot better exit compared to the other cars, or just brake a lot later. And then Chadwick tried to break a little later, and this time didn't work. So yeah, happens.
We saw in Formula One it happen repeatedly. I think there's the same place where Hamilton had his crash as well, and yeah, it can happen to everybody. But Chris, and you also talked about the qualifying there. It's like a 14-second spread, and then across everybody. I know some of the drivers not so confident with the car, but even the top 10 was coming in at 4 seconds. One, showing how long that track is. 2 hours every time. Two and a half minute lap times. But also just how difficult and how challenging it was and how much the rain played the effect. But I thought the racing, it kept me captivated because I did think that Powell might have overtaken Visser, and Visser got the jump on Garcia at the first corner. But how did you view the race?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, obviously, they only get that one practice session, don't they? So we're always going to see a bit of a spread. You know, there's a big mixture in the experience that we've got in there as well. Some of the have been racing a good few years. Some only one or two. You know, Juju Noda's been racing hardly any time at all. So it's always a bit difficult for her going straight around that circuit. The race I thought was really good, actually. I mean, that was probably the move of the season for Alice Powell, just because of how many corners she set it up in advance, showed her experience there. Very, very good move to do it underneath the grandstand as well. And then I thought she was going to go and take the race win, but I think Visser defended it very well, kind of knew what was coming. And then behind, like I said, obviously we had Jamie Chadwick make the same mistake that Max Verstappen did later on in the Grand Prix, didn't they? So both championship leaders doing exactly the same thing over the weekend. But Abby Pulling, I thought she was going to get involved in the battle, but she caught them up, couldn't quite get involved. And then Sarah Moore, I think, caught them up as well, and she couldn't quite get involved.
And they were following Jess Hawkins in a big British queue. Yeah. We know we like doing that.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a very closely contested race. I mean, that was a good thing to see around a very challenging circuit. I thought overall that they put on a good show for the fans there. So well done to Visser. And I think Marta Garcia would have been a bit disappointed with how the start went, but I think she recovered it well to get on the podium at Singapore. I think you've got to be happy with that.
Yeah, she was questioning what she could have done better in the post-race press conference, talking about some of the brake bias issues, which I think plagued her. Trying to get the setup right between the wet and the dry was always going to be difficult. And I do think W Series can put on a good show. Not always has put on a good show with some of the difficulties with the car. But Rene, some of the stories coming out over the last week or so about W Series, quite concerning, looking like the championship speculation at this point might not survive even the rest of this season. What do you know about this, and what do you think about this?
I think I know as much as you know, and that is that there's something going on with payment, and there's a debt of some figures say 5 million, others say 7, others say 10. I don't know. I don't know what to say about. I've never been the biggest fan of W Series. I do believe in getting gender equality and everything. I work a lot in ELMS and WEC, and I see the Iron Dames claiming pole positions and finishing podium spots. And I do believe a little bit more in that philosophy, to be honest. Having said that, it would be a shame for all the people involved in W Series if it comes to an end. That would be bad.
Yeah, I generally find seeing a championship potentially fade away is never something to be celebrated anyway. But irrespective of anybody's position on W Series, and I do really understand from both perspectives, I feel the agreement should be that there's no harm necessarily in W Series allowing some drivers to race, even if it doesn't propel them. And not having it there, I feel, is more detrimental to any idea of having equality in the future. Because like we have with like the Iron Dames and so on, it's not saying that women have to go this route. It's just giving women an option to go this route.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. They've got hopefully 3 more races this season. But if not, if the speculation is correct, Chadwick could already be the champion, although 50 points ahead after even crashing just showed how far ahead she is, as we all could have seen.
But what is the rest of the schedule? There's a doubleheader in it as well, right?
Yeah, so they're meant to go to COTA with Formula One. So it'll be in Austin, and then it's Mexico doubleheader Saturday, Sunday racing. So 75 points available, 50 points. Chadwick's got the lead from when I was writing about it yesterday.
So it could work with logistics, etc. It's not like they're going to Brazil and Abu Dhabi and...
No, but I think that might be some of the problem, right? I mean, Chris, you've been doing Freca and you keep it local, it keep the cost down, and they've been doing Fly. This is the first Asian race. They're going over to America now, and as a small championship in its third year, that's quite a lot of logistics travel. They've had to get Toyota's racing series from New Zealand involved for some of the chassis issues, because getting that air shipped across the world as Formula One shows is not cheap.
No, I mean, obviously, logistically, it's tough, but you're putting young drivers, up-and-coming drivers, on an international stage. You know, all of a sudden, racing fans in Singapore now know who Sarah Moore is, who Abby Pulling is, who Marta Garcia is, and are going to be becoming, you know, big fans of them. I know they were, I think they were doing signings over there and stuff like that, and there was a lot of people turning out for it. So they're putting them on an international stage, which I think is actually more beneficial, really, and that these are the tracks that they want to go on and race on in the future in Formula One. So I think it's a good thing. Obviously, logistically, it is very difficult, and you know, there might be, when they started, they kept it a little bit more local, more European. But I think this is great, you know, for their platforms as drivers, the circuits that they're getting to go to, bit of a difference as well. You know, Singapore, Mexico, COTA, fantastic circuits on an international stage. I think, yeah, as drivers, that's you know, amazing for them to then go and get sponsorship, like William was talking about earlier, to then go and race in something like Formula 3 or European Le Mans or something like that. So, yeah, I think it's great what they're doing. I really hope it continues.
Yeah, well, we'll see how all that shakes out. We just don't know at this point as we're recording, but maybe by the time this podcast comes out, there is news. I was tempted to say AlphaTauri driver Nick De Vries or Williams driver Nick De Vries, because everything's moving so quickly at the moment. It's the racing seems to be slowing down, but the news outside of racing seems to be really speeding up. Prema driver William Alitalo by Wednesday. Who knows? Well, that's enough questions for me, because the F1 Feeder Series podcast is for you viewers and listeners. We're going to move on to the hashtag AskF1FS part of the podcast. If this is your first time watching or listening, you can get involved by using the hashtag AskF1FS on Twitter, joining our Discord and using the podcast questions channels, asking on Instagram, or simply commenting on our YouTube videos, asking whatever it is that's on your mind. We've had a lot of questions. Apologies if we don't get through all of them. We'll try our best to go through them, though. But the first question comes from Ian Hack. And he asked, as you kind of alluded to as well already, Will, that quali was a bit frustrating for you at the start of the season. But what were the issues that held you back? Because in the race, forward all the way.
Yeah, Bahrain was basically just on the qualifying. Went over the white line, so simple as that. I was in the testing for the 3 days, and even in practice, I did go over it a little bit, and they didn't like give me any penalty for it. And then in the qualifying, in qualifying, I also did, and then in the fastest lap, the same as always, I went over the white line a little bit, but they didn't like give me any penalty before, so I thought it's fine. And suddenly they took my lap away. Which would have been P7, P6 in the quali. And then I was in the end P17 or something. So, yeah, was like, felt really bad after that. Because actually the speed was good. Even in the testing there, I felt good all around. And then, of course, in the race, I made up from 17 to 11th and 9, which was, I mean, was, of course, P9 first. In the first feature race was good, but you know, starting from P17, there's not that much you can do other than get on the points, and then starting from P7 or 6 would have been much better. And yeah, then the other qualifyings, I really don't know. Like in Barcelona, I felt fine, basically. Didn't feel awesome, but felt okay, but still wasn't nearly there. In the races, I did go a little bit forward. But definitely, I'm better racing driver than quali driver. That's for sure. But even with that, it felt like sometimes I did well, and it wasn't like enough. And then in the races, I could kind of like race with the other drivers and, you know, fight for it. And if you are not that fast, you can still climb up the position if you know well how to defend and overtake. So yeah, I then in the end of the season definitely was much better, like Spa and Monza, where actually in Spa the speed was even much better. I was just running out of fuel. So then in the last, I had like cold tire starting to the last lap. So, and still I was P13, chest missed on the reverse grid pole. And yeah, in Monza then P7 in the quali, which should have been also like in the other races. But yeah, and I was also P13 in one qualifying. So I two times missed the reverse grid pole. Yeah, in Red Bull Ring. No, I was P14. Actually, but I missed it like by 400s or something. So yeah, I mean, sometimes the speed was there, sometimes not, sometimes because of me, sometimes I didn't know why. But anyway, I'm definitely better at races than quali, but sometimes I didn't have an answer why I wasn't fast enough.
I find it really interesting to see into the psyche of you. You mentioned you're having some nightmares still on the season and you're just like, I was P13 so close to reverse. Like, are you always just thinking what might have been from something that happened 2 months ago?
Yeah. It's actually a pain in the ass because I remember everything from the whole season. And just, you know, when I go to sleep, close the blinds and shut off the lights and get on, I cannot think anything else other than that. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's been quite bad, but it's getting better day by day. It kind of is getting easier to breathe, I should say. But it still hurts, like especially Monza on the last race. Same thing with the track limits. Like they actually like the normally we get four like track limits, and then you get a penalty, and then if you get one, then the team sees it and informs me. And now just they didn't send to the teams their track limits. And then after the race, when it was suspended and then it was actually cancelled, and then after that, penalties came and suddenly I had four times over the track. And I was like, how can it even be?
Whoa. You're not saying the FIA would start putting the penalties out after the race finish. That would never happen. That'd be silly. it's getting a bit ridiculous.
It's a lot. But that's, yeah, kind of not, of course, I could have done better, but was not fully on me. But those mistakes that were on me, still, they hold me, like qualifying in Bahrain. Still, I think about it till this day. it's a long time ago, yeah. So, you know, when I have nothing else to do here and just other than to work and sleep.
I think the army's going to be good for you to get these, sort of having some more things to worry about. Listen, we're going to have to move on to the next question, which I think Rene's got from Marley, is it?
I've got it. And I will pretend like I'm looking down to read out the question so people won't see I'm actually recording by phone. But yeah, Marley is asking, and this is on Twitter, I guess. William, how do you prepare for a race mentally and physically?
That's a good one. Physically, it's just training as always. When I, you know, depends, of course, if it's a back-to-back race, there's not much you can prepare physically or mentally. You just kind of relax and then... Yeah, look at data and videos before you get on the track. But let's say for now, if my season hopefully starts in Bahrain, I would a month or 3 weeks before the race, I would train like normally and then get more towards like less physical and more, it becomes more mental. So the physical side just gets less. And let's say speed training becomes more reaction training, which gives your body just a little bit easier, and then yeah, everything I do like more time to sleep and less time and less maybe the amount of physical training is the same, but then less what do you call it, less like running slower, that's a nice word to it, but I don't know.
Driving slower, did you say?
No, running slower. So if it would be like
jogging.
Yeah, no. But I mean, like, it's the overall physical load would be less, even if I do the same time of physical work. And then also eating and drinking, especially if it's a warm place. That's, I like drink a lot of water and liquids just to have more water in my body, basically. So that kind of water preparing, I don't know the English word for it, but there's a Finnish word to it. And also carbohydrates, I eat a little bit more from fruits and like pasta or something, because I, when driving, especially testing, it's quite really hard on your body. So you have to, like, week before, you have to prepare. So normally that's drinking and eating starts a week before. So just more, basically, which is quite nice, actually. You can eat more. then mental training is imaginary training for sure. So I just close my eyes and go to the track. And actually, that part I take, like, really seriously. So it's not just me closing my eyes and driving. Like, I'm trying to experience everything, like how's the weather, how the belts feel. And I do, like, hours and hours of it, and trying different gears and going through the whole, like, qualifying, basically. So warming up the tires, cooling down the tires, and heating the apex there, or maybe trying wider line and stuff like that. So I before the race weekend starts, I have, like, gone over what should happen or something. Like, of course, racing you cannot really go through in your head, but, like, qualifying and practice for sure you can, and simulator training, of course, it's part of it. I feel like less for me is better, so quality over quantity, because before I drove a lot and it just didn't work for me. So I guess now it's, like, for sure, like, a day before, like, a full day, so, like, 8 hours of driving sim before the race weekend, but not, like, much more than that. So I might drive, like, an hour a day or 2 hours a day, and then that's enough. And especially for me, because I need quali pace, so I just do more, like, quali runs on the sim, which take a shorter amount of time. I do drive sim at my, like, garage, but that's just for fun, like rally and F1 2022 or something like that. There's probably even more. Just, I already listed a few things, but it's a lot to prepare for.
Well, this is what I find really interesting. Sorry, Renny. What I find really interesting is just how much goes in. And when you see drivers so devastated when they crash, and when you're just a general viewer and new fans, look at it and be like, oh, they've just turned up and then they've had some nice food in the hotel and everything. But the preparation starts weeks in advance, so it's no wonder. Yeah. We're going to have to go on to this next question from EF Waldron via Instagram. This is for you, Chris, and specifically I've asked for the best UK karting moment commentary-wise and the best European race in any category commentary-wise. Now, I'm really interested to hear what you say with this, because they're kind of specific questions, but you see you nodding and thinking of an answer.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the best UK commentary karting-wise was actually the first ever race I ever commentated on. It's called Kart Masters. It's the British Kart Grand Prix, where you win the GP plate if you win the race. So it's basically win it or bin it, basically. It's all or nothing. And a kid called Kian Juris, who races in the Porsche Super Cup now in the UK, he was on pole position, but his kart didn't fire up. So they put him in the pit lane, and then he started from the pit lane in a grid of 34 karts and came through and won as a cadet. He went from fourth to first on the second to last lap in the second hairpin. I don't know if you've raced at PFI, Will, but second hairpin, he went through, and I could hear everyone in the grandstand cheering for him. That was absolutely amazing. It was the first race weekend I was ever commentating, and that one was... Yeah, a sensational drive to do it. And he was only, I think he was probably only about 10 years old or something. It was, to be able to have the composure to come out and over to that many kids. Really good. European-wise, I'd say it was the IME International Final in 2018. I highly recommend you watch it if you get bored over the winter. one of the best races I've ever commentated on to this day. We had about 12 to 15 different leaders. One of them ended up upside down. One of them ended up facing the wrong way out of a hairpin. It was at Le Mans.
Are you sure this wasn't virtual? Because this sounds like it's too unrealistic.
Yeah. No. This was a one-off race. IME International Final. There was 120 drivers entered into the race. So to qualify into the final, the B final, only one driver goes through. So that was a really good race because there was 30 of them in the B final. But yeah, 36. So to make it into the final was an achievement. But after that 15-minute race, everyone was out. There were some big names in there, actually. Thinking back, some of the guys in like Freca now, it was around, you know, that time, you know, a few of the guys racing in Freca were probably in that race. But yeah, it was a really, really good race, actually. A kid called Joe Turney won it. He still races in karts now. And that was, yeah, that's the best race. I highly recommend watching it if you get bored, definitely.
Well, Chris, if you can send that link over, I'll try and make sure we've got that.
Yeah, it's the Senior X30 IME International Final, I think, 2018 at Le Mans.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like a worthwhile use of 15 minutes to me. So I do want to have a look at that.
It was good.
Amazing. Next question is from CM Parfait 16, regular question askerer. And there's asked this: hi, William. How would you describe each and every single teammate? Very specific, but I don't know if you could go through this, but how would you describe each and every single teammate you have ever raced against in one word? I don't know if you can go back and remember every single one, but the ones that you can.
Wait, when did I have first teammates, actually? Because I was racing karts. I think to 2015, maybe, first time.
I didn't watch the karting races, I'm afraid, William.
You don't know. Nobody knows me.
If it helps, can we stick maybe to the single seaters instead, if that reduces the
maybe
event?
That's better, yeah. Maybe okay, that doesn't actually make it easier for me. So many teammates. I would say probably fair. One word.
So as you can say that for everyone, so look at this, we've got Americo Deal. This is 2018. Americo Deal, Ido Cohen, Nicholas Crutton.
Cordial.
Yeah, I fought two races in the Italian F4.
Okay. No, I mean, not all fair, but okay. I'm trying to make a better word. Let me think. I don't know. Interesting, actually. Interesting teammates, I would say. That's better.
Erwin Zanotti, Joshua Dirksen, and Nico Gula in 2019 in Italian F4 as well. I'm looking at here. Okay. You continue with that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Still, I like this. David Vidales in Eurocup 2020.
Yeah.
And then, 2021. Well, Chris, you can take this one, I presume. Arden last year.
Yeah. Alex Quinn, yeah, of course, yeah.
Mariangeli.
Yes.
And then
Marganelli.
That teaches me a lesson. And then, Ido Cohen again, can't get away from him, and Mel Vestiti this year. So interesting, and some of them are fair.
Yeah, exactly. Not much more to add. Yeah, exactly. I cannot remember all of them really well. But okay, I actually fairly well from 2018. Dirksen and Captain Cohen, Cohen again this year. No, but especially like this year, I had a good relationship, and even in the previous years, I never really had a problem with a teammate. I've always tried like working with him rather than against him, which happens quite often in like these serious races, because you are comparing like yourself to your teammates, kind of, especially the higher up you go. But still, it's I feel like I've been trying to work with them and kind of improve the car and the team with the driver.
All very good. Looks like there's a question from one of your compatriots that we've got now from Rene, if you'd be so kind.
I've got here Hapokas at Porcanaboy. How much has all the racing hindered your school progression, and have you still graduated?
I presume this is for you, Will, not Chris.
Yeah, I guess so. quite a lot, actually. I had like final exams when I was in Bahrain, so I couldn't do them. So I haven't graduated. I was also last year, there was, because they are in Finland, they are like two times a year. And last year I was, I think, in Paul Ricard in the race, or going to the race weekend, and there were like final tests in my school. And actually my principal called me and asked me, where are you? Because I wasn't on the test. And then I said, I'm in France, in Paul Ricard, and I have a race here. And he said, okay, and have fun. And yeah, then I haven't graduated yet. I still have some courses I need to do. I don't know when I'll do them, honestly. Of course, now it's hard when I go to the army again, so I cannot really do in the winter. Maybe next year at this time, I would have a degree of some sort. Hopefully I can make a career out of motorsport. And I'm not really big on school. I like the first, like, I went to the, like, sport college, kind of, you can call it, which is not too far from where I live. So I had an apartment there. And, like, the first 2 years, I did like to go to school. It's fine. But then racing became just more serious and more serious, and I just didn't have really time for school. And when I had school lessons, I was either doing something for racing and just trying to do everything I can to be a better racing driver rather than go to history class and I don't know.
When you've got the motorsport bug, you've got the motorsport bug. What I like the most out of that, Will, is anybody listening, anybody teenager listening, if you need an excuse not to do an exam, just tell them you're Paul Ricard and they'll just take it at face value. That must be one of the first excuses they've heard.
Probably,
I'm sorry, but Paul Ricard, I can't make it. I'm going to whiz through a few now. This one's from Josh R via Discord, and it's a question for you, Chris, asking what's the most enjoyable part of working on the Le Mans Virtual Series?
To be honest, it's mostly the team that produced the show together. It's been the same team when I went and did Le Mans Esports in 2019 at the 24-hour Le Mans. It's that same team that put that together. They just added to it. It's a much bigger team now. And they're a really great bunch of guys to work with. We have a really good time. They look after us really well while we're there. And working with people like Martin Haven, he's a great laugh to commentate with, likewise Ben, Constanduris and Lewis as well. I'd say overall we just have a really good time doing it, and they take the whole kind of team spirit thing very seriously there, particularly now Gerard is involved as well and is kind of running things at Motorsport Games. He switched over, of course, from the World Endurance Championship. So his experience with that has been really useful. I'd say that's probably the most enjoyable part of doing it.
You've been doing quite a lot of comms this year as well. So you'd have enjoyed quite a few commentary teams and commentary. Well, it's not even a booth sometimes when you go into Biggin Hill for F1, but commentary rooms. So how does it compare?
Obviously for that, we're in a studio. For Le Mans Virtual, which is obviously it's different, but it's quite cool, having that. We do a build up show of about half an hour where we can build up to the race, which is quite enjoyable actually. I do enjoy that part of it as well. It gives us a chance to give our thoughts on the race, build up to it as well, I do enjoy that. But I most like being trackside. In all honesty, that's my favorite part, because you actually get to go and speak to the drivers and find out if there's been an incident, what's gone on. That's the most enjoyable part, is traveling to the circuit, seeing them and meeting the drivers is the best part of all of it.
Yeah, a little bit cheaper to press load.
Said you don't want to speak to me after the incident. Like it, I don't talk to anyone.
Just tweet you instead, Will. We'll get the real stuff.
Exactly.
From
yeah. Easier.
There is a question from, well, you've got the next one. I'm going to give to you, René. An interesting username.
This is a really interesting username. It says William Alatalo 25. I don't have a clue who that guy is, but he's asking to William, if you were on the racing driver, what would you be?
Dead. I don't know. Just got morbid. No.
Right then.
What would I be? I don't know, honestly. Like, my whole life just being racing, so it's kind of hard to think about me not being involved in racing.
Would you still be involved if not racing, though? Would you?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's like bare minimum. So I would do something with race cars. Like being even an engineer is not bad for me. I would like be maybe interested in that. I don't fully know how it still works, but I'm quite good at running, to be honest. It's not like I'm not on long distance, but like let's say 800 meters or 400 meters. So maybe I would be a runner, focus more on that. Also, when I was in the sport high school, I was in the running group because they didn't have a group for motorsport. So like the first
that's the best racing you could find.
Yeah, so like first year and a half, I trained a lot with them. And I became quite good at running, to be honest. I was all competing with them, and they were like doing professionally running. Now it's definitely less for me, but I'll maybe be a runner. I kind of like it.
Still racing, but physical, or maybe engineering, yes, or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Something with sports anyway. Yeah, I wouldn't be a cook or something, for sure, not like...
I understand. No. I think this got the next one as well, if you'd be kind as well, René, with another interesting username.
It's an unironical Reese fan. Okay, on Discord. She asked to the both of you, so Chris and William, what's your favorite memory in motorsport?
Chris, you want to take this one first? Mm. Your favorite memory in motorsport?
Me first, or...? Absolutely. Going into Formula One for the first time is my favorite.
Do you mean going into the studio or going to Formula One?
Yeah, going to the studio for the first time. It was, you know, something I had been dreaming of since I started commentating. To walk into the studio for the first time for the Monaco Grand Prix to commentate Porsche Supercup. Yeah, that has to go down as probably, yeah, one of my favourite memories. I mean, again, back to the Formula 2, and Formula 3 was even better. But walking in for the first time, yeah, scanning your pass and going in. I imagine it's very similar to walking into the Formula 1 paddock as an F3 driver for the first time. It's hard to beat that feeling. It was very similar, actually, when I did that FIA karting for the first time. You kind of walk into the paddock and you think, yeah, I've made it now. So, yeah, that's definitely my favourite memory.
And Will, is it a similar sort of thing, your first time?
Oh, yeah, hard to say, actually. I think one thing I have to, like, pops up in my mind is the first test in F3, like how awesome the car actually felt. It was in Barcelona, and just the pure speed you can take with the car and with the new tires, and it felt like it's so much, like so big the difference from regional to F3, and it just, yeah, felt amazing. So I will always remember that feeling of driving, and also in Bahrain testing the first time when you have the long break. And you hop in the car and you just feel one with it. And it's just an awesome feeling, honestly. Having like good races, I mean, last year, a podium, I think I was really happy with how it went. My car was actually broken. So my front under-roll bar was not, like, it was not attached, basically. So it was like, it was extremely oversteery. And I had to defend like every lap from who was behind me, Isaac Hajar. So, and I was sweating like hell because the car was so weak. So I'd like keep it on the track all the time, and then still managed to be on the podium even with having that issue. So I was really happy with it. I think just driving the F3 car pops up on my mind first.
This next question is from Victor Lysander via Instagram, and it's also another question about your favourites. This one is specifically for Will, asking, what is William's favourite racetrack, and why is it Camorra?
It's not Camorra, for sure. I've never been there. Hopefully I will never be there. I don't think I'll need that track. Maybe it's a good track, I don't know. Because I've never been.
It's absolutely not your favorite. You made that very clear.
No, that's clear. Yeah, not my favorite. Has to be a little bit with more speed. I think it's like 4 kilometers or less than 4 kilometers long. So, not Camorra. It's Spa or Mugello. Silverstone is like maybe third, but Spa and Mugello. It's still hard deciding which one is better. I haven't been driving in F3 car in Mugello. Maybe it would feel awesome for sure, but that's a good one. I have to go with kind of same answer as many other drivers have. So Spa.
It's the same for a reason, Will. I never criticize this. Spa is just, I've never driven it physically, but driving it virtually is so much fun.
It's really good, and just, you know, those corners like Air Rouge and Puhon where you take so much speed, it feels awesome. Maybe if I would drive the F3 car in Mugello, maybe I would have a different opinion, but for now it's Spa.
I'm the host of the podcast, I'll allow two, so Spa and Mugello, that works
okay.
For me.
That's good.
Final question is going to come from you as well, Rene, to lead us out. And the question I think a lot of people have been wanting to...
This is Pavlos Lepol asking on Discord, when and why, William, did you decide that Twitter is your path to entertain the fans?
No, I didn't decide at any point. I don't take like social media very seriously. I just write a bunch of shit there, and if you like it, you like it, and if you don't, you don't. And I don't really care about what people think of me and what they think of my tweets. So it's just, you read them, and if you don't like it, you don't have to read them, and it's up to you, really. I just kind of put it up there to entertain myself and just kind of have fun with it. And just, it's just part of what I do in my free time, and I don't take it very seriously.
Can I ask, Will, if you've got in trouble from anybody, be it your team or anybody else, for anything you've put out?
In my team's like, what do you call it? Kind of a media worker.
PR person?
Yeah, PR person, whatever. Yeah, she said to me that you have to be a little bit careful on your tweets, what do you say up there. But I didn't really care. If she doesn't like, she doesn't need to read them, and that was it's for me. You follow me, and if you like, and if you don't like, you don't have to follow me. So it's up to you, really. And I don't think anybody has really taken that seriously what I say about anything up there. So I think it's fine for now. FIA has not gotten involved, and especially now when I'm not actually driving any series, so I can say whatever I want, basically.
Got six more months of some crazy William Alitalo tweets. Well, I think that's the question everybody wanted answered, and that's a perfect way to end the podcast. So I'm afraid we might not have answered all the questions this week, but thank you everybody for watching and listening as long as you have. If you'd like to have your question asked on a future episode, use the hashtag AskF1FS on Twitter. Drop any questions below if you're watching on YouTube, ask on Instagram, or let us know what questions you have on your mind on our Discord. Look for the podcast questions channel. If you are watching on YouTube, dropping a like on the video, leaving a comment and subscribing to the channel all really helps us out. And if you're listening, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out f1feederseries.com for more Feeder Series insight, and follow F1 Feeder Series 1, F1 FS Americas, and F1 FS Live on Twitter. You can find the links to all of those, plus the Twitter accounts for myself and everyone else on the podcast, plus the video Chris is going to send me the link to, plus Chris's YouTube channel, which is also worthy of a subscribe, in the YouTube description or the podcast show notes. Until next time, keep an eye out on Willy Malotalo's tweets to have a lot of off-season entertainment. But we have been the F1 Feeder Series podcast. Goodbye.